This is Fam Electric Ghost, and we're live on the air with Tony Smaltz. He's a speaker, author, and personal business coach and trainer. I want to welcome you to the Fam Electric Ghost podcast. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me today, Phantom.
Well, I'll let people know we are a featured podcast on the Newsly Network. Yeah, everybody can check that out with the coupon code of Ghost. We'll be on Newsly with an audio version of this podcast later tonight. And we do have your link, www.wtfubook.com. And if the people click on that, they go right to your book.
That's right. It goes right to the Amazon listing. You can pick up the book right there.
Okay, great. So one of the first things we always ask any guest that's on the show is basically like, what motivates you and why do you do what you do before we get into your story?
So what really motivates me is helping people find their way. Like I found my way, you know, I spent years and years, like most people, working a job 9 to 5 or 8 to 4, whatever it is, just drudging through it. You know, we've got 4 kids. So I drag my butt to work every morning, painstakingly through the day, and then come back and be tired and then work with the family at home. So I wanted something better. I wanted something more. And so when I got into entrepreneurship, I found that excitement again, where I could find my way and be myself and be who I wanted to be. And now I'm on that mission to help others do the same. And so back to being a personal and business coach, I'm on a mission right now to help 1 million people by the end of 2024 with my verbal and written words, to find that person, to be the person you need to be, you want to be, and live that life that you want to live. And that's really where my mission comes from.
So did you, were you a coach, or were you doing your speaking before you were an author, or the author like before you were a coach?
Yeah, no, the author is fairly recent. So this book was just published last month in April. So I've been a coach and speaker and trainer since 2019. I've been a leader for most of my career. I was a leader in the corporate world for almost 20 years. And when I went out on my own coaching, I've been doing that since 2019-ish.
So did you feel like that you needed a book when you're into public speaking? I've talked to a lot of people on the podcast that have talked about the whole synergy of, like, if you're going to speak, having a book is actually important. Is that part of your reasoning, or is there something that you just felt you needed the book because you had something to say with this book?
So it's both. So you're right on both counts. So it started, are you familiar with Les Brown?
Yeah.
So Les Brown and I had a conversation. This is back in 2020. And he told me, I need to write a book. He's like, you need to have a book. He's like, you need to have a book for the authority purpose. You know, everyone likes to see an author, you know, whether it being you're a speaker and a coach, people like to see that you have a book. So I started writing a book back in 2020. I was still working full time for a corporation at the time, doing the coaching on the side. And I finished that book. I finished the transcript, and I went full time coach in 2021. So a little over a year later, and I reread this copy that I had written. And I was like, that's not who I am anymore. And so this book became more about the written word and like you were saying, getting the word out there and helping people and creating possibilities within people. So initially writing a book was because I was told by an authority figure, I probably should. And then later it became more about just serving people and helping people with the written word.
Yeah. Cause you got to tell your story. Cause a lot of times, like, you know, during the pandemic, a lot of people started to really kind of find their purpose or find their story, and right, then find the time right to actually take a dream that maybe like an inner child kind of dream is like, why can't I do my own business? Why can't I write my own novel? Why can't I write, you know, this song or be in the theater when I've been doing 9 to 5? And I've talked about a lot of those stories out. And it seems, you know, a lot of times people have to overcome, you know, those issues like being a people pleaser, or they're into like the idea of, you know, the imposter syndrome, which is like kind of everywhere I talk to people, we talk about that. It's just finding your way. Like, And you, I guess as a speaker and an author and a coach, you're probably working through a lot of these issues with the people who come to talk to you.
Oh, you literally hit two of the biggest ones on the head with people pleaser and imposter syndrome. Those are the two biggest that most people deal with. And more so with the people pleaser side, which they kind of play hand in hand, imposter syndrome and people pleaser. So many people are afraid of what others are going to think of them for what they're doing that they're afraid to speak their mind. And it drives me bonkers. And so the people I work with, I have what I call schmaltzy tasks. You know, my last name being Schmaltz, plays on play on words. I have schmaltzy tasks. And these are tasks that I assign people to get them out of their comfort zone, to get them out of the people pleaser. Yesterday, somebody just committed to taking on this challenge, even though I really didn't lay a challenge. one of the tasks I give people, and male or female, it doesn't matter. For, let's say, a male, I'll say, you know, go to the next time you're at the grocery store. You know, you usually go once a week or once every 2 weeks. Next time you're at the grocery store, I want you to walk up to five random people and get real close and go, "I am Batman." You know, I mean, people are going to freak out. They're going to be like, you're going to get the weirdest looks every, you're going to get people going, "What the hell is going on? What are you doing?" And, but you're going to get out of your comfort zone and you're going to, and then most of the people that actually do this, they come back and they're like, "That was great. What's the next one?" You know? So it's fun. It's fun. And it's just, I have a list of those tasks that I hand out.
That's interesting. Cause like, as a producer, when I deal with musicians, like one of the things a lot of people will try to do is show me that they can sound like everybody else. So they can sound like Taylor Swift. They can sound like Beyonce. I'm like, that's not what I'm interested in. What I'm interested in is this. I want to hear the song that you're scared to show me.
Yes. Like, yes.
So that is the song that probably is the essence of who you are and why I want to work with you. Is not because you can sound like Taylor. It's because you can sound like you. And what my job is to make you sound like the best you can be, because that's your ticket. That's your secret sauce, is who you are.
I love
and
that.
That's not awesome. Anybody else is doing. And a lot of people are so afraid of that because there's vulnerability in that originality.
Yes.
And it's easier to kind of fake being somebody else or be in the same kind of zone as of whatever you think it should be, rather than you being you, which is hard for people to actually be themselves.
It is. And that's the imposter syndrome you're talking about. Everyone's thinking that, oh, I'm not good enough because I'm not Taylor Swift. I'm not good enough because I'm not Beyonce. I'm not good enough because I'm not that person. And it's getting past that, knowing that you are good enough. You are good enough. And as soon as you find yourself and accept who that person is, then you can build on that. But if you don't accept it and find out who that person is, then you're going to sit in the shadow of somebody else for the rest of your life.
It's really interesting about self-motivation and like discipline, because a lot of people, you know, they have procrastination. They say, "Oh, I'm going to get to that." Because it was a good example. I've been doing podcasting since 2016. Wow. We're on like episode 1,100 right now. Nice. And I know some guy that kept on telling me for the last 5 years he was going to start his podcast. I checked with him, you know, a couple of weeks ago, and he still hadn't started it because he said, "Well, I got to have a mic. I got to have this. I got to have that." I'm like, you know, when I started, I was just using my cell phone.
Right.
And so you got to start it. And like after your first 10 episodes, so it might be cringeworthy, right? But if you keep on showing up and you start to get that muscle memory, like an athlete doing the 3-point shot, you do 1,000 hours, 10,000 hours of training, you get better. And of course, like if you got to decide, why are you doing it? Are you doing it because you want to immediately get into the top 10? Well, that's probably not going to happen. So like, why are you doing it? You need to understand why you want to do something. And, you know, are you doing it because you love it or you want to have an impact? Sometimes it takes a while. You have to show up, you have to evolve. And the procrastination is not going to get you anywhere.
It's not going to get you anywhere. And you're right. It's not just about what your why. It's also about how bad you want it. Because if you don't want it bad enough, you're not going to make it a priority and you're going to procrastinate. If you really want something bad enough, then you're going to make it a priority and you're going to put the time in to actually make it happen. Otherwise, you're going to pull that procrastination card and go, "I'll do it tomorrow," or "I'll do it next week," or "maybe when I get this equipment," like you were talking about. But there's no better time than now, right now. Do it now. It's funny you mentioned that. I just launched my podcast this week.
Well, most podcasts fail after 10 episodes because people don't see the result they want. But if you stay with it, then, you know, things can happen. It's just really like you got to understand why you want to do it.
Right.
But it's like self-motivation. Like, what's your kind of plan or strategy to get people to be self-motivated?
So I a lot of times I help people with, I have what I call my morning creation time. And I wholeheartedly believe in how you start your day is how you're going to live your day. And so if you start your day, one of the phrases I like to use with people, with everybody, not just clients, is it's okay to wake up on the wrong side of the bed. We're human, but it's your choice whether you stay on the wrong side of the bed or not. So you can wake up in a bad mood, but it's your choice whether you stay in a bad mood or not. So I help people with their morning creation, whether it's meditation, exercise, reading, whatever works for each individual person. Starting your day off on a positive note helps your day go better. And then I also help people with the little things. Too many people, back to procrastination, too many people try to take on projects like this instead of narrowing it down to little tasks. Yes. When you break it down to bite-sized pieces that you can handle, then you get those done. And then you feel great because you accomplished something. Whereas when you think about it in the big scheme of things, you put it off, and then you kick your own butt because you didn't do anything. But when you do those little things every single day, they add up to big results and you feel great about doing it each and every day. Those are the biggest things that I help people with. And it's funny, they sound really small, but most people need to hear that and need to get that.
Do you think, I run into this a lot in arts, is the perfection trap. You get people, like you get a painter, you go to their loft, there's like 100 paintings in there. I say, these are all amazing. Are they in the gallery? Oh, they're not ready.
Right.
Like, what? It's like, do you have any, put any of these into a gallery? No, I'm not ready. It's like same thing with the musician, got 100 songs on their demo tape. Have you thrown any of these on SoundCloud or Mixcloud? No, I'm just not ready. It's like, if you don't take the shot, nobody will even know who you are. Right. And so right. A lot of times people are looking for the so-called perfection. And a lot of times in the arts, I find it's the happy accident, like in science. People, could be experimenting and it's not what they were planning on doing, but something happens and suddenly they have this other product or this other capability. Yeah. And they go, well, do they trust themselves enough to actually bring that to the world, or do they hold, they don't tell anybody about it because they got to stick to the project plan? So it's like, are you secure in yourself enough to, like, if something comes out of the universe, like from the muse, something kind of happened, do you trust it or are you scared of it?
No. So you have to trust it. You have to trust it and you have to act. So one of the things I talk about, I even talk about it in my book. One of the things I talk about is fast action. So if you have an idea, you need to take action right away. And that can be as simple as writing it down. Now, if you try to rely on your memory, your mind messes with you. You're never going to remember that. You're never going to remember that. So you have to write it down. Or even bring out your phone and use the memo thing and speak into it so you have it recorded. So many people are like, oh, that's a great idea. I'm going to take care of that later. And then they forget it and it's gone.
Yeah, voice write memo.
It down, yeah, write it down right away.
Artists are famous. Like I talk to tons of artists and, walking in the woods, they sing a melody into their phone. They'll type the lyrics into a note. It's very important. Hendrix used to write on napkins at the restaurants. There's all these napkins and bats of restaurant menus that got lyrics on them. And because that's what you do when if the moment comes, you go with it. You can't, like you said, you can't procrastinate. You have to lay it down.
Yes.
So a lot of times, like, you lay it down. And sometimes that first time you lay it down, you end up using it. I don't know how many times I've talked to artists. It's like, even if it wasn't the best mic, it wasn't the best recorder, it was so unique that they actually still use it. And so tells you sometimes how important that capturing that is.
Oh, it's huge. And back to what you talked about the perfectionism, people are, oh, it's not ready. It's not ready. Well, one of the things I learned from two of my first coaches was ready, fire, aim, not ready, aim, fire. ready, just let it go. It doesn't matter if it's ready or not. Throw it out there because you can always change it later, but get it out there. So those guys you're talking about that have the 100 songs that haven't been put out there, or those artists that have the 100 paintings that haven't put it out there, put it out there. Stop it. Ready, fire, aim. You know, you aim
the
later.
The world is so big now because we have this internet. We find is like, as artists, is like, you might not kick in your neighborhood or your hometown or your state, but somebody in Argentina or Netherlands could like your stuff. And you would never know that if you don't put it out. And that's why, you know, artists are always very bad at picking the piece that they should put out.
Right.
Like, a lot of times there's famous stories. I look over the history of like big musicians and the songs that they wanted to put out versus the songs that they're, you know, the people around them, their agents and other people are like, you know, this is the song. And they're like, no, this is the song. And it's like, no, like you don't know which song is the right song.
Right. And on the flip side of that, there's other artists that put out the song they thought was going to be garbage, ended up being the big hit. You know, it's
either way, you have to be willing to at least entertain it and get it out into the conversation space. And it, like you said, you can fix it. Like today, like you could change it. You could have another version. Right. And so just because like you could do an independent film and then later get a bigger budget to do the bigger version of it. So at least you could get your vision at whatever level you get the initial vision out there, you still get it out. And so that's really critical. And, you know, so many tools today, you know, that from the computers, it's great and it's a curse because some of those tools make us think that we have to make things so perfect that they become antiseptic. Right. And if it doesn't have character, a lot of times with art, it's like it's the flaws that actually the happy accidents that make it authentic, that make it real, the vulnerability of it. If you just make it perfect, then it sounds, well, that's not really that entertaining and it doesn't really draw me in. It's the aspect of the character of you know, that's what people seem to forget. And it's important to throw it at the wall.
Well, and people are going to be attracted to those that they know, like, and trust. And so if you don't put anything out there, they don't get to know you. They don't get to like you. They don't get to trust you. So you got to put that out there. So you mentioned the word vision. I got to ask you, what does that mean to you when you say the word vision and you're talking about
the vision? Well, I have an artistic vision. Like my artistic vision is around this idea of expansive sound. So expansive sound to me means it's multiple genre. So what does that mean? It's like I could have a song that has fusion elements, punk aesthetic elements, progressive rock elements. And in our industry, they tend to want you to just to be in one lane. But my vision is I like to play multiple lanes. And so I created my own label called Expansive Sound Experiments because that's where my mind is. And so I like to have the freedom to not be controlled by any genre, to kind of just put out whatever I feel at the time. So it's my vision is to have that kind of expansive aspect. And I brought it to my podcast as well. I initially only interviewed musicians. Now I interview all types of creative people. Because I said, well, the musician was kind of narrow. But I've opened it up to be interesting, creative people from all over the walks of life.
Nice.
So it's the same idea I've threaded through two different things.
Now, when you had this vision, though, did you see it like it was already happening? Like you saw what you wanted?
Evolved. It kind of evolved. I mean, the original idea of the music is what I was kind of trained in classical. Then I got into jazz and like, personally, I liked rock music. I liked punk and I liked, you know, funk. I liked a lot of different rock. A lot of different music. My father had a massive collection and he had like Hendrix and Brubeck and Johnny Cash. It was just very eclectic. Wow. It was all over the place.
That is all
because
over the place.
Because it was all over the place. I would read Rolling Stone and Billboard magazine. And I really got into my thing was like if Rolling Stone or Billboard no matter what genre it was, they gave a guy 4 or 5 stars, I would listen to it even if it wasn't a genre I really knew. So I would actually start to process it because I was a listener like that. I was a fan like that. I actually became a musician that did the same thing.
Very nice. Very nice. And the reason why I brought it up, the reason why I talked about vision, is that's one of the big things that I talk about with my clients and with people, is having a vision. So there's a difference between goals and visions. You know, people try to lump them in the same category and they're not. A goal is, hey, I want to make $1 million this year, or I want to lose 30 pounds. That's a goal. Now, a vision is seeing yourself like you've already had that. Can you visualize what it's like for you to have lost 30 pounds? Can you visualize what it's like to have $1 million? Because if you can't see what it's like to already have that, what are you shooting for? What are you trying to go for?
You're not going to hit it.
You're never going to hit it because you don't even know what you're looking at. You're just looking at something on a piece of paper. You got to be able to see it like it's already happened. Like, this is what my life looks like, having $1 million in my bank account. Or this is what it looks like to lose 30 pounds. Then you're like, okay, now I know what I'm going for. Otherwise, you're throwing darts at the wall they're throwing darts in a dark room, spinning around 10 times, hoping to hit the dartboard. You're more likely to stab your friend in the leg than you are to hit the wall or the board. You know, got to have that vision.
Yeah, it's like to be able to kind of identify your story and your purpose. Yes. And so some people are like, well, what's my purpose? You know, is it to be a doctor, or is it to actually, I want to be able to heal people. Right. So maybe it doesn't have to be a doctor to heal people. Maybe you could be a life coach or a mentor that heals people. Right. So it depends on, like, I can't get to my goal because I don't have the money to go to medical school. Yeah. But you can maybe still get to that goal if you could become a mentor or a life coach or somebody who's like, you know, a soothsayer, whatever you want to say. But like, whoever, however you do it, you could still get there. But if you give yourself, like you said, like an impossible goal, I don't have the money, I don't have the asset, I can't do it. But there are ways to get to where you want to be that are, you know, actually achievable.
Yeah, those are all BS excuses. If you can see it, like you're already accomplishing it, the rest of it you can find a way. So excuses are like a victim card. You need to throw it out the window. You can make it happen. I'm not going to say it's easy. You have to work at it. However, when you can see what it is that you want and see it like it's already happened, then you can find the way. And if you, like we talked about earlier, if you care about it enough, you'll make it a priority and you'll find a way.
Showing up. Like if you show up, and it's like, you might fail. And a lot of times when you do something, you will fail. Right. Yeah. But you can look at it. Is that really a failure, or is it a step on the way to my success?
Yes. Right.
So yes. If you as a musician, we have, you could call them failures, but they're demos. Yeah. I don't look at them as failures. It's like, hey, those are no bad notes. Those are opportunities.
Yes.
And they become, you can look back at everything you've ever done. And sometimes we go back and we grab something we did 5 years ago or a week ago, and it actually is relevant to where we are now. And exactly. So we go back and we work on it, and it becomes like 5 years ago, it didn't go anywhere, but now it does, because now I found it and it fits into what I'm doing now.
It's funny you mention that. Just two days ago, I was going through my old computer files. I went through some old files, and I found a course that I built 4 years ago that didn't go anywhere. Like you said, I released it yesterday and sold a whole bunch of copies. Like right off the bat, I'm like, I got like one sale 4 years ago, and now I'm like, here we go. It's like you said, it wasn't ready then, or people weren't ready for it then, but today it works. And it's amazing how that works. It's keeping with those things, but you have to be able to go back and review those as well. You know, the old ideas, they're still ideas. You still got to keep those there.
Well, that's why you should journal and, you know, like I, you know, as an artist, I have all these recording equipment, and it just keeps anytime I go to play, it records, whether I wanted to or not. I kind of set it. So anytime I start, it just automatically records and puts it down.
Nice.
And I kind of got into, I read about Zappa and I read about Neil Young, and their style of recording was, they would just, you know, I don't care if we, you know, we're not going to practice it. We're going to actually put it down on tape as we practice. Wow. And then go listen to the tapes and then figure out what we're going to work on or what we can keep. And, you know, a lot of their projects came out that way. I mean, Zappa is famous for going through his tapes and kind of mixing live stuff with things from different periods. Right. Neil was the same way. You know, a lot of his stuff, like Tonight's the Night, that was all like on this big reel to reel that his band was like running in the studio and they just kept on putting stuff on it. And they say, yeah, that kind of works. And they released it kind of raw. And nice. And it was like, wow, they didn't really put a lot of things to fix it. They left it the way it was. And it became kind of this kind of piece of art known for its like fragility and vulnerability because he didn't try to overcorrect it.
Right.
He just
right.
let it be what it is.
They let it be them. They let it be them, who they are. You know, this is who they were. This is how they put things out. And that's a big piece about what's missing from a lot of people is they're so back to the people pleaser. Everyone's so afraid of what somebody else is going to think or who they're going to offend that they're afraid to be who they are. Be yourself, man, woman, everybody, be yourself. Who cares what anybody else thinks? Guess what?
They can say whatever they want. The haters can say what they want.
Right.
But you don't have to believe them. Right.
No.
You know, it's like there's a famous quote from like Bob Dylan when he went electric. People started yelling at him saying he was a Judas. He was terrible. And then he went back on the tape and I have it. He's like, I don't believe you.
Nice.
That's what Dylan said to the audience in London. He went back and he kept on playing the music that they said they didn't like.
Right.
And he said, I don't believe you. And to me as an artist, like that's a really brave thing to do because a lot of people would have just run off the stage, stop playing what the audience didn't like, but he felt it. You know, in 66, that music didn't work in London. It didn't work in Newport Jazz Festival. The folk festival, but it was interesting that by 1972, that music was filling stadiums.
Right.
It was the same music. But in 66, it wasn't ready for that audience. But by 72, it was. And he just stayed on the same train and got there.
And you're using a great example. Great example, because Bob Dylan had a horrible singing voice. Horrible singing voice. But he had great lyrics and he had great music. And so, again, it took time for it to catch up. But when it did, it did. And it exploded. And he'll go down in history as one of those guys that you listen to his voice and you're like, I've heard a lot better singers than this.
Yeah, it's like the content. It's how he tells the story. Like once you get into the past, his voice is like Lou Reed. Lou Reed's a poet, right? And he doesn't really sing his songs. He speaks his songs.
Right.
And either you like that or you don't. But eventually, Walk on the Wild Side kind of connected. His Velvet Underground stuff didn't. But that one did because people was like, oh, that's what Lou's trying to convey. He's kind of conveyed that kind of thing. And then people like, wow, they connected. That one worked. People liked it. They didn't like everything he wrote, but it's like once Dylan was able to kind of show people that if you can write, if you can be like a writer, like you're actually a novelist and put that into music.
Yes.
There's a value to that, regardless of whether his voice is perfect pitch, which actually created a whole generation of alternative and indie rockers from Michael Stipe to REM to like punk rockers and grunge rockers that didn't have to have perfect pitch.
Right.
That they could go out and be vulnerable.
But they had great lyrics and great sound to their stuff. And those are great examples. All of which I'm like you. I like all different genres of music. So I'm good with that. No, that's awesome. And those are great examples. So let me ask you another question. So you asked me, what do you do daily that really gets you going?
Well, I do daily is I pretty much record anything that comes to mind. If you look where I am.
Yeah.
I'm in my bedroom studio.
Nice.
It's physically in my bedroom because my ideas come to me all the time. And so what I like to do is just like put down music all the time. And I create a lot of music just because I don't have to go to my studio. I don't have to have an excuse to go to my basement or go to the garage or go downtown to the studio. It's right here. And so I decided to set that up, you know, 5-6 years ago so that I could constantly be in that zone where if something comes to me, I can just put it down. And I find that I do put down daily stuff. Now, whether or not it goes out is a question, but I do put out a lot of content.
Nice.
But there's, you know, I've just found a way to make it easier for me to produce.
Nice. So that's what really fires you up is really just laying down the music is fires up Phantom every day.
Yeah, just to be able to do it is like it's a cathartic thing for me. I don't know if you talk to a lot of artists, is like the ability to actually do your art, you know, to have the canvas, to have the camera. If you have that access and you were able to actually do it as much as you wanted to,
right?
I kind of set it up so I would not have any kind of limitation on that.
Nice. Awesome. That's awesome.
Well, yeah, I think a lot of people can do that, you know, by just, like you said, the voice memo, writing things down in a book journal that they, you know, they, you might think, well, it's not, it's really up to you. Cause it, as a person, some people feel, well, my ideas aren't good enough. Cause I'm not Shakespeare. I'm not Orson Welles. Not this, I'm not that, but like, you don't know that the nugget you're putting down is going to connect, right? Cause you're a human being. And a lot of people actually feel the same way as you. Maybe you don't believe that. But once you put down your individual feelings and you find a way to express it, it becomes universal. You can connect to frequencies with people. And I think a lot of people underestimate their ability to connect. And they just have to try it.
Oh, big time. Big time. Most people underestimate their ability to connect or their ability to put stuff out there. In fact, most people take for granted the things they do day in and day out. Like, you record almost every day, right? Now, most people don't give themselves credit for something like that. Art, whether it's an artist, whether it's an author, whether it's a coach, doesn't matter. Most people, or just a career professional or a stay-at-home mom, most people do not give themselves credit. I'll use the stay-at-home mom example. You know, one of the things that I do myself and I have other people do is at the end of the night before I'm getting ready to go to bed, like last 15 minutes or so before going to brush my teeth, I do what I call a four square journal. And so I take my journal, I open it up and I draw a line down the vertically and horizontally. Top left corner, I write down everything that I've accomplished for the day. And this is where most people fall short. Most people don't give themselves credit for going to work, for filling up the gas tank, for doing laundry, for doing the dishes, for mowing the lawn. Those are all accomplishments, but we're so used to being in our drones day in and day out.
Right. They don't count it.
They don't count it. Those are all accomplishments. And when you start counting those every day, you're like, holy crap, I got a lot done today. You know, stay-at-home mom, I got laundry done. I picked up the kids from school. I took them to took Joe to soccer practice, blah, blah, blah. Boom, 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 accomplishments. And then the second square is gratitude. So now I'm grateful for the things I've accomplished and I'm grateful for the people and the things in my life. And then section three is, what did I learn today? And that can be whether you were on a podcast or whether you were taking a course, read a book, you learned something. And then number four is, what's the number one priority for tomorrow? But for me, of the four boxes, the accomplishment section is the biggest because that is where most people fall short. Most people do not, like the artists you're talking about, they recording every day. I recorded 2 hours worth of content today. I recorded 2 hours worth of songs today. That's huge, huge. Some of these guys are like, nah, I didn't get anything done today. What do you mean you didn't get anything done today? Words for songs, you wrote down or you recorded a bunch of stuff. This is all stuff that is accomplishments every day. And when you recognize that, it motivates you to do more the next day.
Yeah, I think like once you figure out how to show up in your life, whether you have to learn how to show up for yourself, right? Before you show up for anybody else. And then you can show up for other people. But if you can't get a handle on showing up for yourself to actually, you know, realize that you're actually making progress, like you said, and actually, you know, write down, give yourself, you know, gratitude, you know, actually be happy, you know, be willing to have a radical idea that you can be happy. The idea, a lot of times people think like an artist, it's a big trap for us. There's a lot of really good art comes from melancholy, comes from sadness, comes from breakups. And so some people feel, as artists, I've run into it, where they feel they've always got to be on that chaos train to do anything good, any good work. And I'm like, well, you know, why not try to figure out how to generate the same kind of art without being so damaged?
Right. Right.
Because it's not good for your soul to constantly be in the damaged state, because eventually it causes trouble.
This is why I talk about, I talk to lots of my clients and I talk to people about, take that victim card and throw it out the window, because in that damaged state, most people are pulling out the victim card. Oh, this happened to me. This happened to me. Well, even though, like you said, you might, some of your creativity may come from that moment, that depressed state or that down state, the melancholy state. It doesn't mean you have to sit there. I mean, you may create some great value out of that, but it doesn't mean your mind has to stay there. You're like, ooh, I'm going to write this down. I'm going to take, this is a great song lyric. This is a great song. And then you can go right back to being you and being in the present and leaving that back in the past. But if you hang on to that and you hang on to that melancholy state, you're gonna find yourself in a world of hurt.
Yeah, because you can actually get a lot of power out of actually being happy, right? And actually generating like compassion and kind of enlightenment kind of mindset. I mean, it might seem kind of hokey. The problem is some people say, well, that feels like, that doesn't feel authentic. But if you start to get passionate about, I actually can be happy. I actually can do something that's upbeat, and I can feel it, and I don't feel like I'm lying, right? They really have to get that out of their mindset that you feel like you're pretending. Right. Because that's where some people get hung up on. And it's like, how can you do that without feeling like you're lying? Right. How can you be authentic at doing that?
Well, a lot of that comes back to the people pleaser. You know, when you're so worried about what other people think, then you're not typically your authentic self. And you do lie, or you may not lie, but you don't tell the whole truth because you're so worried about what other people are going to think that you keep that part in. Oh, I don't want to share that. I'm worried they might judge me and they might call me something that I don't want to hear. Who the hell cares? You are you, be you, and what they think, if they don't accept it, then move on. Find somebody else who's better and should be in your life. You know, Jim Rohn talks about you're the average of the five people you spend the most time with. Well, cool. Mm-hmm. Make those five people that add value to your life. You know?
Instead of being like down in a dumps crowd. Like you're down in a dumps crowd, it's like, you know, law of attraction. If you're around the guys, they're saying like tomorrow is going to be terrible. Next year is going to be even worse. Right. But if you're not on that train, I don't want to really be around that.
No, because you're gonna attract that. You're gonna attract that negativity. You know, I like to think that tomorrow is gonna be better than today. Next year is gonna be better than last year. Because guess what? As long as I keep thinking that, that's more likely to come than if I think the other way.
Now, it's noted in some of your background that you have like a humorous style of teaching, which I can pick up on. But have you maybe could give us examples of like how humor has helped you in your teaching method, where people maybe don't realize how much like you can use that as a positive like reinforcement tool?
So, I mean, it's hard to really say it on the spot. When I'm having a conversation, though, I will pick up on things and I'll be a little sarcastic, not like terribly so. I don't want to like make somebody feel terribly awkward, but I will break the ice by really saying, you know, like I was talking to a client earlier today, and she was being a little bit of a, she was being a negative Nelly. And I was like, hey, snap out of it. You're being a bit of a B. I said, B, I used the actual word, but I said, you're being a bit of a, and so snap out of it, stop it right now. And I said it in a joking fashion, and she's like, she stopped and she's like, oh, you were joking. I was like, yeah, I was joking, but not really joking. But so I like to just keep the ice loose. I keep the breaking the ice and keeping it loose. A lot of people don't know. So I use the phrase be schmaltzy, and Schmaltz is my last name. And Schmaltzy, I was called Schmaltzy for a lot of years. And when I've been to Germany a couple times, and the guys over there called me Schmaltzy, and I never understood why until years later. And it turned out that when I first went over there, I was 17 years old on an exchange program, and they started calling me Schmaltzy. And I was like, I didn't think anything of it. I thought they were just playing on my last name. Well, it turns out the German definition of Schmaltzy means to be overly sappy or cheesy, like a joke's cheesy.
So that's what they were doing.
Right. So years later, I talked to my friend over there, and he came over here back to the States and hung out with me for a couple of weeks, and he started calling me Schmaltzy. And I'm like, Schmaltzy, I'm like, you guys keep calling me that. What is that? He's like, you don't know? And I said, no. He's like, that's because when you were over there at 17, you were hitting on all the girls and you were using the cheesiest pickup lines, the grossest, the garbage stuff. And he's like, so all the guys started calling you Schmaltzy because it was horrible and painful to listen to. I'm like, so in my early 20s, I was kind of offended. I'm like, what? I'm like, so years later, when I became a coach, I'm like, I need to find something that separates me. And then one night I had a dream about that time, and I'm like, that's me. I am cheesy. I am sappy. I'm owning it. And so,
once you know, like, something that is like inherently you,
yeah,
you can either try to hide it, and then it's probably hard because it's probably going to slip out.
Right.
Or embrace it. Like, a lot of times, like, once you embrace the thing that really makes you you, and you realize it's like your secret power, but yeah, that you actually can use it instead, yeah, of trying to suppress it, that's like, you know, self-actualization. Like, we find that in, like, in a lot of times in arts, is like when you finally get out of that hole, that, like, you know, you get some guy that's classically trained and they realize, like, I don't want to be a classical pianist. I want to be a fusion jazz guy.
Right, right, right.
And everybody was telling me I got to go do this, and I don't want to do that. So then they actually go to where they really want to be. But then people might judge them and say, well, that's not real music, right? Well, that's not real discipline. You're like, you're not as disciplined as playing in the orchestra or playing for the Boston Symphony or something. It's like, no, it's like, it's a different type of thing. It can be just as disciplined. You just gotta, maybe if they don't believe it, you do what you want, but you do right, who you are. You don't let other people kind of guide you. You find your own voice.
Well, and staying Schmaltzy, like I'm talking about, it keeps me from worrying about from staying out of the people pleaser arena. You know, my mm-hmm. wife and I, it's funny. So when I had that dream and my wife and I talked about it, we are two of the goofiest people you'll ever see. And I may not do it on coaching calls or on podcasts, but I'll be her or me or both. We'll be those guys. Well, we'll be in the middle of the living room. Our son will be sitting on the couch and we'll come up and just like break into a dance. There's no music going. We'll just come bust a move right in front of everything. This kid, he's 17 now, but for the last 4 years, he said he's embarrassed to bring people over to his kid, friends over to the house because of how goofy we are. I mean,
you're goofy.
Our rings, like on the inside of my ring, literally says her goofball and her says my weirdo. You know, it's where,
right. Well, you guys found each other. So that's the deal. Cause like, you know, that's, it's always interesting when you actually can be comfortable with, yeah, that. Cause, yeah, a lot of times people, they let the outside influences or what they think you're supposed to be,
right,
like really drive it. And I think, you know, the true success and happiness is when you actually embrace that kind of, you know, the you. And people are like, well, that's arrogant. And it's like, it's not really arrogant, because it's just like, you're just finding out who you're actually, just embraced who you are.
Yeah. I'm being who I am and forget the rest. Well, except for the close people, of course, but you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's interesting. So the whole like process of the book, I mean, did it take you a while to write it, or did it just come to you? Did you have to work at it?
So the writing of the book was actually fairly quick. So when I made the decision to basically scrap the old book, I kept like four, I literally only kept like four chapters of the original 30 chapters. I only kept like four that are in the new book. And what I did was I mapped out all of the ideas I had for chapters. Here's all of the things. So it's actually in the closet over here, but I'm not going to pull it out. But there's actually a big piece of paper that I wrote out. I just did a brainstorming. I wrote out all the ideas for chapters and I just started to write. And that's one thing I learned from some of my author friends and some of my mentors, is if you have topics, if you brainstorm topics that you know and you believe in, then you won't ever have writer's block. And so I would literally write.
Flow state writing is good.
Exactly. And so I would write a chapter a day. So I literally wrote 45 chapters in 45 days.
Wow. You didn't have it. Yeah. Sometimes people have an agonizing issue of like not and the flow's not coming.
Right.
Right. And they go and they, and I've talked to authors, they're fantasy writers, and they build these worlds, they build all these character designs, and then they have trouble with the dialogue. It's not hitting and they can't get into the zone. And it's kind of like, you know, I've always been a believer in the muse, kind of Victorian poets, a big pull for me. And the idea was, you know, they just felt that we, as an artist, you can channel.
Right.
And really channeling is you have to believe you can channel. But if you have some kind of logical brain thing coming in telling you, oh, I can't really channel, then it won't come. And then you get stuck. But if you actually embrace that you can channel,
right,
that's how you can write all the time. Like if it's like a flow that doesn't stop because you're not willing to let your logic brain come in and tell you, oh, why is that? I gotta overanalyze that. No. Just let it go.
Let it go. And so part of that, so one of the things that helped me, if you go back to my, if for anybody that follows me on social media, if you go back to my Facebook lives back in December and January, December of last year, January, if you see a live from in like the evening, normally I would go live in the morning, but if you see a live at like 5 or 6 o'clock in the afternoon, that's me prepping myself for writing because I sat down and I knew what topic I wanted to write about today, but I wasn't feeling it. And then but I knew I could speak on it. And so I would go live and I would just start talking. And all of a sudden, by the time I got done with that live, I'm like, oh, here it is. just
get it all out there. Yeah. That's a really cool thing. Cause I used to do, because I've been podcasting so much, I don't do as much as I used to, but I used to do live demo rehearsals.
Oh, nice.
On Facebook and YouTube. And I would just go from my studio and I have cameras and stuff. And I'd have like 3 camera shots of me just coming up with stuff out of nowhere. And a lot of it was like in the last couple of years, there were some of my albums that actually came primarily from those live Facebook rehearsals. Nice. Some of the songs were like note for note were exactly I actually tracked them. And not only did I put them live, but I had my tracking devices actually track all the instruments on separate tracks. So if it was good, I actually had a good recording to go with it. So I started to, you know, believe in myself enough that I'm not going to just, you know, have the Facebook video. I'm actually going to have it on my master recorders too.
Yep.
And it actually was a really good way of generating material because it kind of forced you to not start and stop.
Right.
Like you were live and you had to get through that whole session because you can't start and stop it. You got to just go.
Yeah. You're not editing live. You're going live.
Just go with it, go whatever comes to mind and try to build the song.
Well, and then when you find a good one, it builds that confidence where you're like, heck yeah, that was awesome. I want to do that again. And you do it again and you keep on developing that stuff.
Yeah. That stream of consciousness kind of flow state. It's kind of like you read the room. Like if you're a public speaker, you come into the room, you got your set speech, but then you read the room, you go with the set lines and it's not kicking. And then you say, well, I got to make an adjustment. I better adjust to this crowd because they're not getting it. And so, get the ability to kind of read that room and read the moment and go with it instead of going with the planned thing that might not go well.
if you drop a joke in a 1,000-person room and only four people clap, you need to change it up.
comedians run into it a lot. Right? It's like, well that didn't work.
Even speakers, I've been in front of crowds. I did quite a few appearances when I was back in Panama City, Florida, where I always tried to lighten it up. Like I said, I try to be schmaltzy. I try to, keep it humorous. And I'd drop a joke and nobody would react. I'm like, oh, shit, I need to move on to something else.
Yeah, it's like you hit the bad note and then, either you stop the performance or you do what Herbie Hancock said, like, you can actually, the no bad notes, that's an opportunity, right?
That is an opportunity.
He was playing with Miles Davis and he hit the wrong chord.
Right. And they kept going. I love that story.
Yeah. He took the song and went further. It actually didn't stop the band. It just went in a different direction.
Now, was it Miles Davis that thought he screwed up or was it, who was it?
Well, Herbie thought he screwed up.
Herbie thought he screwed up, but they kept going and it turned out to be great.
Yeah, Miles said, I just took it as an opportunity to like hear that note and I adjusted, but he adjusted his note.
The drummer adjusted where
he was going and the bass player adjusted. Yeah. That's what happens. But if you're too narrow and you got to go on what was, you know, written on the page, and you're like, oh, that wasn't on the page, so I got to start and start again.
Yeah, get rid of the blinders. Stop the tunnel vision. Open up your awareness to everything around you and be aware and react to those things.
Yeah, it's just a hard thing because, you know, there's so many tools today where, you know, you could use AI, you can use all kinds of advanced techniques to try to make something as perfect as possible. It's like, but, you know, AI is great, but AI is looking at everything they ever got done through its machine learning and trying to give you the best example. But is that really you?
No,
my whole thing as an artist is I have the ability to use some AI, right? I could, but, you know, it's just going to reference a lot of other people. And as a musician, that's what we do already, right? We already take our influences and they subconsciously show up. And if you really listen, I can find, oh, I was pulling from this bass line. It was in my subconscious. I didn't realize it. Or I was pulling from this show tune and I actually used it in this song. Right. That's just the what human creativity. But when you let a machine do that, okay, it did it. And it might seem like it's real, but it's not your subconscious, which is my point to some of the people using it. It's like, that's not you.
You're correct.
That's the machine. So do you want the machine to represent you or do you want to represent you yourself?
Yeah, you and I are on the same page. You know, when I wrote my book, so many people are like, did you use AI? I'm like, no, this is 100% me. There is zero. I did zero searches. Now I use ChatGPT every once in a while for some things, but I don't ever use what comes out of it. I make it my own. And in the book, there is zero. I didn't even use ChatGPT at all. It's 100% me. And AI, just like you were talking about, it seems to me very inauthentic. It's not you. If you want to get your voice out there,
I mean, you could get it to copy Humphrey Bogart lines.
Yeah, but why?
Casablanca. You could get it to be in the same zone, right?
Right.
But is that really you?
No, it's not.
It's not you. It can do it. And if you want to make your living doing that, it's kind of like to me when you're somebody that samples music and you sample the exact same bass line that was used on some other song and then you throw different lyrics on it versus actually doing a little bit more than that. Like actually taking that and then adding all kinds of layers and then it becomes like art. Because if you actually take that and then you layer it and you add all kinds of other things, then it becomes like your piece of work. But if it is your piece of work. Yeah. If you just take that hook and change the lyrics, that's not exactly your work.
No, it's not. We're definitely on the same page there. We definitely believe the same thing. But AI can be useful, but not when it comes to the authentic being of who you are and what you're doing. That's different.
Yeah, I see it as a tool. Like if I wanted to help me with SEO, if I want to help me with like promotion or help me like do distribution or help me do a task like mixing. Like, so if I say I want to use a mix that sounds like Fleetwood Mac Rumors versus actually on Main Street. Like, so I want to see, what does it sound like if I use the same kind of processors on the vocals that Stevie Nicks had on Rumors versus what Mick Jagger was using on Exile on Main Street. Oh, that's where that tool is kind of cool because it'll show me what it sounds like. And then I can make a choice. It's like, I want it to sound more like that. So, but it's still my vocal. Is this how I'm treating the vocal sonically?
Right. And so you're using it for ideas, but you're still making it your own at the end of the day.
It's more for the sound processing of like the production. Right. Okay. You know, if you can use it to kind of give a different character to the sound. Okay. There's so many things we can do in sound where we can change what something sounds like by running it through effects and running it through processors where it'll actually change the character of what you sound like. And that it really is your intention. Like, are you trying to intend to make it sound in a certain zone that versus another zone? And it can actually, you know, put a picture in your mind depending on what you do. And it's like, really, it's up to you as the artist, how you want to frame it. It's like the lighting in a movie.
Yeah.
The lighting people, they figure out where they want those lights to go because it's going to make that scene look a certain way.
Right. Good call.
It's interesting, but you know, I'm not against tech, but like, I think you should use the tech in a way that's actually going to still reflect your individuality.
Right. Well, like you said, use it as a tool, not as a being, you know,
and as a substitution.
Right. Exactly. And unfortunately, too many people are out there doing that. And there's entrepreneurs out there selling that. Well, here, write a book with AI. Well, no, you didn't write a book then. AI wrote a book. It's not you. It's them. It's not. Yeah. Come on.
Yeah. Just because, you know, how many things we already have a tendency to clone things, like, you know, the monkeys were a clone of the Beatles. Right. Yeah. We kind of already had that tendency in the world.
Right.
You know, how many clones are there of Beyonce? How many people try to be like, you know, Taylor Swift? We already have that with human beings doing that.
Right.
Do we really need machines doing like even more of that?
No, we don't. No, we don't.
Don't really need that.
No, we don't.
So what are you thinking about, writing more books? Or are you focusing on just pushing this one?
So I am actually going to write at least a second book, if not a third after that. So there, when I mapped out this book, I could have easily written this book 1,000 pages, but nobody's going to read 1,000-page book. So, so I took a lot of chapters and I put them to the side for the next book. There's a lot of, I tell a lot of personal stories in this book. However, there's a lot more personal stories I really want to share, and those will probably go. So the next book may not be as much about serving as much as telling the story. So this is about helping people and serving people, helping people grow. And the next book will probably be more about the Tony Schmaltz story and the family, our family story. There will still be some helpful stuff, of course, but it'll be more about the background.
More like a biography, maybe.
Exactly. So there's a lot of stuff that, and I've already written a lot of this stuff. When I sat back and said, okay, I got to leave this book under 300 pages or about 300 pages. And I'm looking, okay, this chapter's out, but those chapters are going to go into a collective for the next one.
Are you thinking about doing an audio book for any of that? Is this going to be available as an audio?
Yeah. So it's funny. I'm actually recording the audio version this weekend for this book. And I'm doing it myself. Absolutely. Oh, yeah. That is a pet peeve of mine, that people that hire somebody else. It's like, no, if you're writing your book, you need to read your book to people. Come on.
I get it. Like fantasy authors want to have like a movie. So they want character actors to do it.
Right.
Voice actors to do it. But like, if it's your book,
right.
Like, and it's like not a fantasy novel, it's not a fictional novel, then I would think if you go out in public speak, you probably can do that.
Right. And what's funny about Amazon, so when I first published the book on Amazon, they actually will not allow you to pre-record an Audible. You have to have your hard copy published or your Kindle version published before they let you do an Audible. And I'm like, all right.
I guess they got mechanisms. I guess they want to put the gate up like that. You know, in a world where the gates are coming down, people create new gates. It's like, okay, thank you. Thank you for creating the new gate. That's all right. I won't come down on them too much. I mean, we're on their podcast channel, so don't get mad at me. Right. yeah, I think it's awesome that you chose to do the book and you're doing more and you're doing an audio book. So people go to the WTFUbook.com. Is that how they can actually get everything about your book? They can learn about how to buy it and.
Yeah, that one there is going to send them directly to Amazon. That's a redirect right to Amazon
That's a redirect. Okay.
Yeah. And so if they want to learn more about me, you can go to TonySchmaltz.com and that'll have everything. So.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Well, I can add that into the description of the podcast, so we have that as an additional URL. Awesome. So we can do that. So that would be cool. Yeah, because we always want people to, you know, these are clickable when I put them out there. So.
Yeah.
Anywhere the podcast is exist, once they have a URL on it, they're fully clickable once they're published. So they can go right from the description right to wherever you want to direct them. Nice. But thank you again for being on the show. Time always goes by quicker than I ever imagined. We're at
right. I can't believe it's been an hour already. We've been having fun here. This has been amazing.
It's what I try to do. I try to make, even those people tell me, like they told me, like we shouldn't go more than 15 minutes, but you know, all of our podcasts are an hour.
Always
an hour. I feel like that you don't really know a person in 15 minutes. Like But once you talk like an hour, if you're, you know, if you're authentically talking, then people will get your vibe.
Exactly.
And the whole point of doing this is to have the audience understand who you are. Right. And I feel like, you know, that's the length of time I need to get people to know who you are.
Exactly. I like it. I like it. It's been great. And thank you for having me. This has been so much fun.
Thank you very much. And we'll talk to you possibly when you have another book, but thank you.
All right. Make it a great night, everyone.